my veins, breath like a dagger of cold air. I fired the gun randomly into the trees. Again and again, just to drown out the chaos in my mind. Then, the rustling of something farther in, reacting to my shot. It was running now, and I was right behind. I didn't care what it was. I was going to shoot it. Even killing a defenseless animal would help. I just needed an outlet. Any outlet for this turmoil inside. I reached a vantage point over a sudden indenture in the ground and caught a glimpse. Black, shaggy, running on 2 feet. The dog. The monster, whatever it was. I took another wild shot, but then it was gone again. I fired several more rounds randomly into the woods, but nothing else moved after that. It was gone for good this time. It wasn't a complete loss, though, because the last chase had led me to something like a campsite. The remains of a small fire, a few cans of food, a rolled mat on the ground. This wasn't an animal lair. Stranger still, I found drying brushes and a small stack of framed paintings on the ground. They were all original, all depicting standing dogs with a paw raised to their mouth. Besides these were an equal number of identical frames, each containing nothing but plain background, which matched that of the dogs. There's only one conclusion I was able to draw from this. There's a killer who is deliberately trying to trick people. First comes the dog painting, either given or sold or installed. I don't know. Then he sneaks in to replace the painting with the torn background, looking as if the dog has disappeared. He must have to leave someone alive to spread the tale of the supernatural painting, although I still haven't figured out a reasonable motive behind this. Maybe there is no reason to killing. Maybe killing is the reason. I don't know. I can only imagine how terrifying this must be for someone who wasn't able to track the painting's origin, and how powerful the killer must feel reducing someone to that point. To take someone's family and destroy their conception of reality in a single blow. There was almost something elegant about the senseless savagery. Even if they never told another soul about what they'd seen, that kind of experience would haunt someone for the rest of their life. To have that strong an impact on someone, on multiple someones. To be the most important person in their life without them even knowing who you are. But you'd know, wouldn't you? Do something like that and you'd really know who you are. And no one could ever take that away from you. All these paintings left and the killer won't be back now that his secret has been had. Almost seems like a waste. But at the same time, maybe he's relieved. A secret like that, burning inside of you, can eat you up inside. I wouldn't have blamed him, even if he'd led me to his camp on purpose. People like us, sometimes we just want our work to be appreciated. Night 18. We can fix your child. As you inevitably age, your skin will wither and mush like putrid fruit. Your organs will decay into useless sludge. Even your mind will rob you of a lifetime of memories and experience, reducing you to nothing but an organic shell of who you used to be. You've begun to feel it already. Imperceptible by the day, but implacable as the marching years, your body is growing soft and weak. You will never again be as young as you are in this moment, and even now you can smell all those lofty dreams of youth rotting into idle fantasies that will never be realized. Ah, but those sweet children, they are the closest thing that you will ever have to immortality. They are your only chance to rewind the clock, rekindling the magic of forgotten innocence. Your legs will still tremble as you drag yourself out of bed each morning, but you can feel the spring in their step when they play. Their mastery of the skills which have eluded you, their passion for discovering a world which is dead to you, their burning blood which hasn't yet learned what it means to love and not be loved in return. Everything that they are is yours. It's too late for you, but not for them. But only so long as you use the wisdom which life has cruelly carved into you, moulding their nascent minds to live the perfect life you have forfeit. I know you're doing your best, and I know that sometimes isn't good enough. They will turn from you in their naive arrogance, as you have turned from your own parents. They do not understand how selfish they are being, destroying not only their own life, but killing your second chance at life as well. But don't worry, because we can fix your child. Do they scream and fight back against your commands? We can fix that child. Do they waste their time on idle laziness that detracts from their or your fulfillment? We can fix that child. Are they brutish, rude, ugly, stupid, ungrateful wretches who do not understand what sacrifices you have made for them and what they now owe you in return? One of our greatest success stories began with such a beast. His parents worked very hard for him, but often that meant leaving him alone for long hours to entertain himself. He became obsessively addicted to games during that time, holding his parents' love hostage to continually demand the latest consoles and media. His adoring parents gave everything to him, hating themselves when they reached their limit and had no more to give. They tried to get him to exercise more, to eat better, to study and learn and play with other children. He would only retreat into his cave, though, spurning any attempt to change his ways. Classes were failed, graduation was postponed. The boy didn't understand, refused to understand, what life would be like when he had to support himself through his own grit and merit. He was setting himself up for failure, and sure as any disease which devours from the inside out, he was killing his parents. They were desperate when they came to us. They blamed themselves for his shortcomings, not understanding that it was their child who was broken, until we offered our fix. They didn't care how. They just wanted it done. I sat them down, free consultations, mind you, and had them both write down a list of everything they wanted their boy to be. Let the imagination run wild. Now is not the time to be encumbered with reality, which has already been a burden for too long. They were hesitant at first. Then the father wrote down, "Be more motivated." That encouraged the mother to add, "More happy." The more they wrote, the more they broke the illusion of their son's adequacy. And the more they had to say, "Make him taller," said the father, "and get him into shape." "More compassionate," said the mother, "and more sociable with his friends. Smarter, funnier, more honest, more polite." Both of them were crying by the end. The boy they had created was nothing like their son, but I was there to console them. Nothing like their son yet. But don't worry, because we can fix that child. The parents did as they were instructed and left town for the weekend. Standard policy, it can be stressful for them to be present during the fixing. We came for the boy in the dead of night when we knew he would be home. We are professionals, after all, and don't like to waste our time. We don't bother to knock. That would only give him a chance to escape. The parents left a key with us, and we entered the house without lights. Up the stairs to his room, where the sound of machine guns still blared from his speakers. The little bastard stayed up all night, although that isn't uncommon when the parents are gone for the weekend. He might as well get his last games in now, because he won't be playing them anymore after we're done with him. His game was loud enough to mask our entry. He didn't notice us until we ripped the swivel chair from out under him. The struggle is always brief. Sometimes we'll get a fighter, and we have to subdue them with force. But any damage done to the body is inconsequential. He won't be using it for much longer. I'm pleased to say that even this little monster was fixed within a week. His parents didn't even recognize him, but there's no doubt that they will be happier now. He never talks back. He never speaks before he's spoken to, and even then he'll say, "Sir" or "Mom." He hasn't touched his games again, and nothing about his passive countenance promises so much as the least resistance any more. Of course, the original is still with us for research purposes. The one that's been returned is the only one you'll ever need, though, and you'll love him to the ends of the earth. In return, he'll love you back more than you thought possible, because he, in his young life, has already learned a lesson that some of us do not understand until our grave. That this world has no place for broken things. Night 19. The Slaughterhouse, Camera. Two men, pickups, trucks, work overalls. New hires, they said, but they were professionals who knew their way around a slaughterhouse as well as anyone. They were always comfortable with the hogs I dropped off and never had to ask twice about how I wanted the meat prepared. Of course, both of them deserved the same done to them as they were doing to those poor animals, but there's no way I could have known that when we first met. Fact is, there aren't enough government-regulated slaughterhouses to accommodate the demand. It's a long, expensive process to get a USDA-certified house, and I'm not about to drive 80 miles and pay their exorbitant processing costs just so I can sell my meat across state lines. That's where custom houses come in. These are inspected by the USDA, but they don't require the same standards or constant oversight. I'd been taking my animals to one for about 4 months when a John Smith, the pot-bellied son of a bitch running the land next to me, caught wind of my switch. The bastard started raising hell, telling everybody that my meat wasn't safe, that I tortured my animals, poisoned them, anything to get the local markets to buy his stuff instead. Now, I already had a contract with the fellas down at the custom house, but I called up a friend at the FDA and got him to send over the tapes from their safety cameras. That would give me some proof that everything was up to code, and then I figured all this nasty business would just blow over. The thing is, though, those men at the custom house, I guess they didn't know about the cameras. Otherwise, there's no way they would have let that abomination pass in the open like that. Everything started out normal enough. The hogs were restrained and stunned with an electrical current, so they didn't feel any pain. The slaughtering was quick and efficient, and then they suspended the animals by their hind legs, like ought to be done. After that, they were supposed to bleed the carcass dry, but instead, they just left them there. Job wasn't even half done, and there they were, packing up their coats and keys and slapping each other on the back like the day was over. I scrubbed through the video to watch the rest of the process when they got back. They didn't return that night, but something else did. A pale blur dashed across the camera. By the time I stopped it, the creature was in full view. Taller than a man, and thinner too. Skin like rice paper and bulging with so many veins that it might as well have been made of string. Teeth like 100 needles and shining black eyes like a midnight prayer. One by one, the beastie was draining the hogs dry. There wasn't any sound, but I could almost hear the puncture as all those little teeth dug into the carcass, submerging its head so deep that I could only see the neck. Then all those veins began to swell, twice, three times their old size, trembling and straining so hard under its thin skin that I thought it had to pop. But no, it just ripped free and went to the next animal. There wasn't much light, but where the moon snuck through the window, its head glowed with blood, almost like there were red lights stuffed underneath the pale skin. I couldn't watch long, and I sure as hell couldn't go showing this to people. Get my name associated with something like that, and I wouldn't just be out of business. I'd have torches outside my door and rocks flying through the windows. First thing the next morning, I went down to the custom house. My animals were all sliced and prepared, perfect as ever. But I told the men I was done. I didn't give a reason, just that I wasn't coming back. They got angry about me breaking contract, and we got to yelling at each other. Tensions were getting high, and one of them was so red, I thought he was going to take a swing at me. I suppose That's why he said what he did. He was angry, and he wasn't thinking straight. He regretted it the moment it came out of his mouth, but there it was.
We promised it the animals. It's not going to let you leave.
They didn't want to say more, and I didn't want to hear it. I just drove off without looking back. I locked my doors and windows real tight. I got my shotgun out from the cabinet and cleaned it until I could see my face in the barrel. And then I prayed to anyone or anything that would listen. I prayed that I was going to live through the night. It wasn't right for something like that to exist in this world, but if it did, then maybe that meant there was something watching over us too. Or maybe I'm alone right now, and then I wouldn't mind never seeing the dawn again. After all, why would I want to live in a world where devils were real, but angels weren't? It was about 2 in the morning when I heard it. I hadn't gone to sleep, just sitting up with the TV on low. I'd spent a long time just listening to my own thoughts, but the wind had started picking up, and I couldn't stand how it played around the plank house like fingers running along the wood. I started to nod off once or twice, but the hard handle of my gun was a constant reminder to stay alert. I don't quite know what I was expecting, but it wasn't the knock on my front door. Slow, regular, rhythmic, casual as a mailman dropping off a package. My grip tightened, and I held my breath. There was a long pause, and then it came again. 1, 2, 3, 4. I couldn't take it, but I couldn't force enough air out of my lungs to warn it off. 5, 6, 7. My body shaking so bad I could barely hold the gun up. The knocking stopped. Before I could even take a proper breath, I saw the face up against the window. 100 needle teeth smiling at me from the darkness. I took my shot. The glass exploded, and the face was gone. I fired again, just to be sure. No sound, but the tinkling of broken glass and the ringing echo in my ears. Then the screaming started up. If you've ever heard a pig scream in the middle of the night, then you'll know it's like a banshee being dragged down to hell. And knowing what was out there, what it was doing to them, what it could have done to me, that made it all 1,000 times worse. I couldn't force myself to leave the house. I just sat there and listened to the chaos of the night. The dissonance of those suffering animals struck something so deep in me that it made me hate being human. I hated caring, feeling, hated my capacity to imagine what was going on out there. I wish I could have just turned it all off, become a mindless animal, or even further into oblivion past the point of this waking nightmare into a sleep so deep I didn't care if I ever woke up. I hated myself for being too afraid to open the door, and kept on hating myself as the screams cut short one by one until there was nothing left but the wind-like fingers probing their way in. I hated myself straight into the first tint of dreary daylight splashing through my broken window. 9 full-grown hogs and 5 little ones, all gone. And me, the one who should have been the first to go, I'm still here. The custom house has closed down, and I haven't a clue what happened to the 2 who worked there. I'm not getting any more animals, though, because I know I can't live through hearing those screams again. I don't know what the creature is eating, but I figure the carnage from that night is going to last him a while. Maybe he's moved on, and that will be the last I see of him. But I hope not. If there isn't anyone protecting us from on high, then it's just us down here who've got to protect each other. John Smith and I never got along, but next to that thing, I'm ready to call him my brother. And I may not be an angel, but as long as I've got my gun, I can still kill that devil next time I see him. So now, I'm just waiting until the night I look out of the window and see all those needle teeth smiling down at me. Won't it be surprised to see me smiling right back? Night 20. Don't leave an audio recorder on overnight. The first time I realized I was an adult, I was 23 years old. I was in the grocery store when a kid asked me to get some sugar-blasted excuse for a breakfast off the top shelf. I pulled down the box and stared at the cartoons gorging themselves on the luminescent emoticon-shaped diabetes pebbles. He took the box and said, "Thanks, mister." Hearing that almost made me feel dirty. Now, at 27, I know I must be an adult because I'm tired all the time. I go to bed tired, I wake up tired, and in that brief blur of confused social awkwardness in between, I'm spending that daydreaming about actual dreaming back in bed. I went to a doctor to see if he could prescribe me something, since apparently self-medicating with Adderall like I did in college is discouraged, and anyway, I couldn't find a dealer. No, I wasn't depressed. Yes, I was getting at least 8 hours a night. No, I didn't have congenital heart failure or explosive herpes. So why didn't I ever have any energy? The doctor said I might have sleep apnea, a condition which obstructs my breathing while sleeping and causes me to wake up multiple times in the night. I didn't remember waking up, but he said that was common. He wanted me to spend the night in a sleep lab and get a nocturnal polysomnography, which measures my heart rate and oxygen levels for detection. Screw that. I might be an adult, but I'm not old. It was hard enough getting everything done while being tired. The last thing I wanted was trying to get some rest in a lab. I opted instead to just leave an audio recorder on overnight. Apparently, the periods of obstructed breathing would audibly contrast with the heavy breathing which compensated afterward, thus potentially allowing me to detect the issue. No downside, right? I used an Android app, which is a sound-activated audio recorder. I messed around with the calibrations a bit and finally reached a sensitivity which detected heavy breathing. Giggling, like a little girl. That's what I heard when I played back the audio. I could faintly hear myself breathing in the background. There were 3 distinct instances during the night when I heard it. I was getting more tired every day, though, and this seemed like an easier solution than going into the lab. Obviously, this was a joke from the app developers. There weren't many reviews on this one, so I downloaded a new recorder and tried again the following night.
"Isn't he a precious thing? Shh, you'll wake the poor baby. Hee-hee. Just his back. Their backs aren't very sensitive. Let him sleep. He isn't ripe yet."
That's what played back to me the following morning. I don't know what's going on, but I've never felt less like an adult than I do now. It's times like this when I really wish I wasn't single. I had a mini panic attack and almost smashed my phone on the nightstand right there. Tonight, I'm going to try a video recording too. I hope I'll still be able to sleep tonight.
"Let him sleep. He isn't ripe yet."
Do you have any idea how hard it is to get a good night's rest after hearing that in your room? I've never been one to freak out about superstitious or supernatural things. When I see a black cat crossing my path, I just figure he has some place to be. Sure, I've read scary stories for their thriller aspects, and I'll watch horror movies with friends just so I can laugh at them for being scared. But I never personally bought into that kind of stuff.
"Shh, you'll wake the poor baby."
After playing the tape for what felt like the 100th time, I was ready to expand my boundaries of reality just to find some explanation. Even deciding that it was a ghost or some nonsensical shit was better than having no explanation at all. Calling my friends or family, though, I would be ruining decades of my carefully maintained image of the chill guy who doesn't let anything bother him. I was resolved to give it one more night with a video recorder to see if I couldn't catch the trickster before asking for help and embarrassing myself. I tossed and turned for hours last night. I got up about a dozen times to check my laptop to make sure the video was still recording. Just to be safe, I saved the video stream to a password-protected Google Drive folder so it was stored on the cloud. Even if someone tampered with my computer in the night, I should still be able to see what was going on. I watched the slow minutes drain through my digital clock as though they resented their obligation to pass the time. I don't even remember falling asleep, but one moment I read the time as 2 a.m., and the next moment it was 3:30. I must have slipped out for at least a little while. The red recording light was off. I immediately jumped up and checked my laptop, but the video file was gone. The backup stream on the Google Drive was still there, though, so I scrubbed through the video. Me on my back. Me on my side. Oh, look, there's me, upside down with my feet on the pillow. And then, a face was peering into the screen. A little girl, couldn't have been more than 14, was in front of the camera. It was difficult to tell much about her, though, because her skin was charred black and flaked off all the way to her heat-splintered skull. Her hair and nose were completely burned away, and all that was left of her eyes and mouth were sticky pits of darkness. I skipped back to the moment she appeared and played the video. She rose up from below the camera angle as though she was lying on the floor. She turned her head towards my sleeping body, then to the computer.
"What's he looking for?" she asked.
"He's looking for us," the other voice said from somewhere behind the camera.
"Shut it off. Can't we just tell him what's happening? He deserves to know. Jessica, we agreed about this. It's either you or him. Get rid of it now."
That's where the video stopped. The timestamp read 3:21 a.m. They were here just a few minutes before I woke up. I checked my window. Locked. The door? Locked from the inside. I even opened the closet and every cupboard in the small apartment kitchen. There wasn't any sign. In about 5 minutes, I'd returned to my computer to watch the video again for clues. I left the Google Drive folder open, though, and the backup video file was now gone, too. It was still in my room somewhere. Unless I was going crazy and had woken from a nightmare, but I don't think so. Even with the video gone, my floor was still littered with the black, crumbled flakes of burned skin.
"It's either you or him."
I didn't like the sound of that. I couldn't stay in the apartment knowing they were here, but where could I go at 4 in the morning? I called the number for the sleep lab my doctor gave me. There was staff still on duty, but they said they were all booked up through next week. I grabbed my jacket and keys and headed out of the door. As long as I stayed still, I was in too much danger of falling asleep again. I didn't have any real plan, but I figured I would just walk around until the sun rose. I was more exhausted than ever after that restless night. I still couldn't quite accept that this was happening to me. Maybe I was just so tired that my mind had started playing tricks on me. It was hard to be afraid while walking around the familiar park near my home. Vivacious bursts of spring decorated the ground, and I gulped down deep breaths of fresh air. I could just call in sick today, get a good long sleep, and maybe all of this would just go away. "Hey, buddy." I nearly jumped out of my skin. It was just some homeless guy sleeping on a park bench. I pulled my jacket up and started walking faster.
"Hey, don't be like that. Got any change?"
"Sorry, nothing to spare."
"Yeah, right, bastard," he said.
Unpleasant, but it's a common enough encounter in the city. It was what he said next that made my blood run cold.
"I hope the lady burns you next, like she did to that girl."
I slowly turned to face him, but he was just a crazy hobo who would rant about anything. This couldn't have anything to do with. But the image of that burned skin was not so easily banished from my mind.
"What girl?"
He grinned to get my attention. I could clearly count all 5 of his yellow teeth peeking through his tangled mass of facial hair.
"Jessica, I could hear the lady screaming the name the whole time the girl was burning alive. I hope she gets you too." "He isn't ripe yet."
The words kept playing a loop in my mind while I walked. I was getting hung up on the word ripe. The connotations implied I was getting ready to be harvested for food. But what entity could possibly choose me? I've never built on ancient Indian burial grounds or disrespected a primordial altar. I did once find out about some guy's gamertag password in high school and stole his characters, but I hardly think that's grounds for being tormented like this. There was absolutely nothing about my life which suggested I should be the target for this madness. $10 was enough to get the homeless man talking. He says he gets thrown out of the park if he sleeps here too often, so he's also set up a camp a little outside town in an aspen grove. The last time he was there, about 3 days ago, he witnessed a young girl, Jessica, being burned alive while an older woman, the lady, watched. Of course, he didn't actually say it in those words. His version had a lot more colourful phrases like, "I'd sooner eat my shit and eat the next shit afterward than go through that," or, "She was screaming like a dozen cats getting raped by a tiger." I passed the last gas station in town, and he said the Aspens were only about a 10-minute walk from here. I've never been so tired in my life. This had to be more than sleep deprivation. It was a mortal weariness, a spiritual weariness, almost as though the bond tying me to this world was starting to unravel. I kicked a rock in my way, and I half expected my foot to pass straight through it. My best guess is that the lady is some kind of demon, and she sacrificed the girl, and now she's going after me. But the older voice in the recording had said, "Jessica, we agreed on this. It's either you or him." How could Jessica have agreed to go through that? Was she tricked? What could she possibly stand to gain? I knew something was wrong the second I stepped into the aspen grove. The cool morning breeze died the moment I passed the first trunk. The green leaves hung frozen and unnaturally static. The only thing that seemed to be moving was a steady stream of sap which poured down the trees. Not sap. Blood. I could tell by the dark red streaks left behind on the white bark as it oozed towards the ground. I considered turning back right there, but the more unnatural it seemed, the more important it was for me to stop whatever was happening to me. There was a clearing in the centre of the grove where a circle of salt was laid upon the earth. Sitting in the centre was a middle-aged woman who I can only presume was the lady. Her face was plain and warm, although heavy lines of grief pulled her eyes downward. She wore jeans and a simple floral sweater, not exactly how I would have imagined a witch or demon. Her eyes were closed, hands folded calmly in her lap as though she was waiting for someone. For who? For me? "You're the lady." The moment I said it, I realized the homeless guy probably just called her that because he didn't know her name. "You're the one who burned Jessica alive." She opened her eyes wide, comforting, soulful eyes. Eyes I would have trusted under any other circumstance. "You weren't supposed to find out until the end. I'm sorry you became involved in this," she said. "Until the end? You mean when I was ripe? What was going to happen then?" I wanted to hit her, to throw a stone, to yell, anything. But seeing her so calm and ordinary and sad, I couldn't even raise my voice. The little energy I had left was fueled with indignation and anger, and without that, it was all I could do to just keep standing. "I told you, Mother, he deserves to know what's going on." My skin prickled. Jessica was sitting outside the ring of salt, or at least what was left of her. The whole body was as black and rough as charcoal. All her clothes had burned away, and the skin had burst in so many places to reveal flayed sinew and cooked bone underneath. "You burned your own daughter alive?" I felt the rage building again, and I didn't fight it. I had to hold on to it. This feeling was all that reminded me I was still awake, still alive. "You're right, Jessica. I've been so selfish," the woman sighed. And seeing her in such dismal misery, my anger was once more replaced by profound pity. That's when she explained everything to me. She wasn't a witch at all, only a mother who couldn't bear to watch her daughter suffer. Jessica was born with cerebral palsy, an incurable disorder which devastated her mind and body. She could barely swallow on her own, and her mother had done everything within the boundaries of medical science, only to find that it was not enough. After that, she'd tried alternative medicines, crystals, powders, ointments, prayers, and finally, at the end of all things, rituals. Her pursuit of the arcane led her subtly down the road of the occult until she discovered a process known to cure someone of all mortal ailments. In this vain hope, she burned Jessica alive in order for her to return purified. "The entity I made the pact with was willing and eager up until I lit the fire in her flesh," her mother told me. "But afterwards, he began to make demands before he would bring her back." At the demon's request, for that is what she found herself bound to, She planted 7 black seeds in the food where she worked as a grocer. Only once the seeds had ripened within their victims, Jessica would be allowed to return. By the end of her tale, the last of my strength had fled me, and I was sitting beside her in the salt circle, while Jessica watched from the outside. "I'm sorry," she mumbled, no longer able to meet my gaze. "I had already burned her. I couldn't stop before I..." "What happens when we're ripe?" I asked. My throat was choked and dry. I couldn't help but glance back at Jessica's grotesque disfiguration. Was that what was in store for me too? "The seeds are a portal into the other side," she said. "Once they're fully grown, the demon will enter this world and..." "And possess me," I finished. "I'm so sorry. He told me you would just go in peace. I never thought one of you would find out what was going on." "How long do I have?" I asked. "I don't know. Not long. That's why Jessica and I have been watching the people with the seeds. We've been waiting for them to burst." "Can you stop it?" I knew what her answer would be before I even asked, but I had to hear it anyway. If it meant bringing her daughter back, would she have stopped it even if she could? "No. All I did was plant the seeds in the food. How they work is as much a mystery to me as you." We stared at each other for a moment. I lifted my hands and felt their unnatural weight, and she flinched as though afraid I would strike her. "Do you hate me?" she asked. "No." And it was true. I hated that this was happening. I was afraid, but I didn't hate her. I might have even done the same in her place. "I can't hate you, because I need you." "I told you there's nothing I can do," she protested. "You can stay with me here and keep me company until it comes. You're a lucky girl, Jessica. Your mother loves you very much." I didn't even have enough energy to sit upright anymore. I slumped against the lady. It's easier for me not to know her name. And she wrapped her arms around me. I pulled out my phone and considered calling my family, but I didn't know how to make sense of my situation. Instead, I'm posting my final update, which they will find and come to understand. The lady held my hand as I rested against her, and together, we're waiting for oblivion to come. Night 21. Better can make you smile. The first time I met him was at my grandfather's memorial. Dark, round spectacles just covering his eyes. Long black coat, steel-grey hair halfway down his shoulders. The whole room of handkerchiefs and downcast faces. But he was the only one smiling. I was only 8 at the time, and that seemed like a good enough reason for me to sit beside him. "Did you know Pappy?" "Better than anyone," the man said. He must have been almost 70, same age my grandfather was. "Were you his friend?"
"His closest friend. I'm the one who killed him, you know. You can't get any closer than that."
I tried to ask him more questions, but the service was starting, and my mother kept turning around to hush me. Mum gave the eulogy, and that was the first time I'd ever seen her cry. I guess I must have started sniffling, too, because the man next to me put his hand on my knee and gave it a little squeeze. His fingers felt like he'd just come inside from a blizzard. By the end of the final sermon, they brought out some bagpipes to play Amazing Grace, and then I really did cry for real. I remember it being hard for me to understand why I'd never get to see Pappy again. Sure, he was dead, but that didn't mean I couldn't still visit and eat his barbecue sandwiches, did it? Once I started crying, I didn't know how to make it stop. People must have been sympathetic, but just remember how embarrassing it felt to have everyone staring at me. I was the first one out of the room, running all the way outside the church to the big oak tree in the yard. The man with the dark spectacles was the first to find me.
"Hey there, champ," he said. "Bet I can make you smile."
I shook my head and pressed my face into the bark.
"Watch this," he said, in a voice accustomed to being obeyed.
I looked up to see him whistling at a squirrel sitting in one of the lower branches. The squirrel ran down the trunk until it was a few feet above our heads, then jumped without hesitation to land on his shoulder.
"How did you do that?"
I asked.
I can do all sorts of things, he said, crouching down to my level so I could pet the squirrel.
Why did you kill him?
Because it made me happy, he said, standing to lift the squirrel out of my reach. Run along now. I'll see you soon. We can play another game then.
When?
When I kill your grandmother. Not long now.
Not long at all. 3 weeks, and she was gone. My parents told me that she just missed Grandfather so much she decided to follow him to heaven. I knew better. One night, I couldn't sleep and crept to the top of the stairs to listen to them talking about it in the kitchen. Grandmother's hands were peacefully folded over the knife in her heart when they found the body. The man was there at the next memorial, just like he promised. I was afraid of him now, sitting as far away as I could. I wanted to tell someone what he'd done, but somehow my 8-year-old brain thought that I would get in trouble. It was my fault she got murdered. I knew it was going to happen, and I didn't try to stop him. He found me again while I was waiting for my parents to leave. Out by the tree. This time, he'd gotten there first. I could feel his dark spectacles trained on me as I crossed the yard, but I couldn't stop myself. I wanted to know who was next. I hate you, were the first words out of my mouth.
That's all right, he said. Most people hate things they don't understand.
I want you to stop killing people.
I'm not going to do that, he replied. But here's what I can do. Bet I can make you smile.
He sat on the grass and concentrated. Maybe I should have run, but it wasn't a matter of fear for me. It was simply a choice between interesting and boring, questions and answers. I watched the tree as the squirrel scampered down the trunk.
Come to me,
he whispered, and off it flew, straight onto his hand. Not just the squirrel, either. Ants were swarming out of the ground to line up at his feet. Beetles and worms and unknowable, monstrous, squirming creatures threshing their way through the ground to bow before him. Even a stray cat came sprinting across the yard, none of the animals the least perturbed by the other's presence. They were all watching him, expectantly, like a dog waiting for his treat.
"Let us dance," he said, and so they did.
The squirrel hopped from one foot to the other, the cat stood on its hind legs, and all the insects began to sarcastically twirl upon the ground. Despite everything, I couldn't help but smile at the spectacle. I wasn't smiling the next time I saw him at my mother's funeral. 31 years, and he hadn't aged a day. I could feel those dark spectacles on me the moment I entered the room, like childhood's imaginary monster come to life before my very eyes. The same grey hair, the same black coat, the same subtle smirk creasing the edges of his face. I couldn't stand to sit in the same room as him. I felt hot and dizzy. I didn't know what was real and what wasn't, only that I needed air. My feet traced the familiar steps to the tree without intervention from my scattered mind. My mother had been found by her neighbor the same way, a knife in her heart. I wanted to hit him, to kill him, to wipe that smirk off his face, whatever it took. I was seething when he approached. Drawing close, all my carefully prepared arguments and threats blurred from my mind. I couldn't understand how anyone could have the audacity to say, "Calm now, it's not all bad. Bet I can make you smile." "You're dead."
"Sometimes I wish I was."
He sighed, sitting down on the grass. I hesitated, not the answer I was expecting.
"But if I was dead, then who would have been there to kill your mother?"
I kicked him while he sat on the ground, as hard as I could. I jumped on him, grabbing a fistful of his long hair to fling him down into the ground. Everyone else was still inside the church. No one but God was going to see what I did to him, and God would understand. He didn't make a move to rise or resist. He just spat enough blood out to say,
"Come to me."
I kicked him again, and he went down hard. And again, I heard something break under his coat. I would have kept going, but a piercing pain in the back of my neck made me spin around. A crow was diving at me, pecking me, its black eyes glinting with intelligence and purpose.
"Fight your own battles," I shouted, batting the bird away from my face. "Or are you too scared? Is that why you only kill old people who can't fight back?"
"I can't kill you," he admitted. I was on top of him again, pushing him back into the dirt. The crow wouldn't relent, but I could suffer through any cuts and scratches it gave me to get at him. "But here's what I can do," he said through his broken teeth. "Bet I can make you smile."
"You know what? Fine, make me smile. And if you can't, then you're going to turn yourself into the police and tell them about every person you've killed."
"And if I can, then you're going to help me with my next kill."
That took me a second to process. Of course I wouldn't do it. Of course I wouldn't smile either. My face was harder than stone. I nodded. "Deal." I let him stand to dust off his jacket, which he did quite easily, as though he had suffered no hurt from my assault.
"I can't kill you, because you're not ready yet. Your grandparents were. Your mother was, although she never told you. All I do is help them along their journey."
"You're insane. I'm not smiling."
"I've got proof," he said, forcefully popping his jaw back into place with a slight grunt. "It's all around you. After I've helped them, they never forget me for what I've done."
I looked around where he gestured. The tree, the squirrel crouching to spring at me, the thousands of insects even now gathering at his feet, the crow watching from the branches, its head cocked to the side.
"Mum?"
The crow hopped down from the tree to land on my shoulder, brushing its head against my cheek. I swallowed hard. I felt more like crying than smiling, but I guess I was doing both, so he still won the bet.
"Death is an evil thing, only when it is seen in isolation," he told me. "But death never exists in isolation. It's just an abstract thought to imagine it that way. A single thread, once woven, may seem lost, but only until you step back and see the whole tapestry it helped to create. Come with me now, and I will show you how to weave."
And as sure as any bird or beast who answered his call, I followed him, and I've been following ever since. Night 22. Recordings of myself. Someone has been mailing me recordings of myself. First one was a couple of weeks ago. It was just an unmarked DVD in a paper sleeve, addressed to me without a return. I figured it was some kind of spam mail and tossed it out. Ain't nobody got time for that. The second one was getting ready to romance the trash too, but it happened to arrive the day I bought a used Xbox. I wanted to test out the DVD player and didn't have anything else handy, so I just popped it in and let it play. The footage was a bit fuzzy and shaky, like someone was walking while they recorded. It showed me entering my apartment building, following me until I got into the elevator. I even looked right at the camera for a second, but racking my brain, I couldn't remember noticing anyone strange. There was a voiceover too, but it was in German, and I couldn't make sense of it. I started it over and watched again. Only about 15 seconds, it wasn't so much creepy as surreal. I was honestly more bothered by how terrible my posture looked than I was about someone recording me. Probably some kid showing off his new camera or something. The world is full of weirdos, right? The third one rattled me, though. The video showed me in the grocery store, wandering up and down the aisle, looking for something. About 10 seconds again, more German voiceover. This wasn't someone innocently playing with their phone in the lobby anymore. I was being actively followed. I threw it away immediately, regretting it, and digging it out of the trash a couple of minutes later. I had to get this translated so I could figure out what the hell was going on. The next day, I shuffled through my mail like crazy, looking for another DVD. Nothing came. Or the next day,
or the one after that. Getting it translated fell further and further down my to-do list, until a week or so later I'd practically forgotten about it. Until yesterday, anyway, when another paper sleeve slipped out from between some junk mail and landed on my floor. I rushed to play it, regretting it from the very first frame. The screen was panning around my room, my bedroom. It was dark, but everything had a green night vision tint. The camera focused on the bed and started to approach. It took me a few seconds to recognize the lump in the dark. It was recording me while I slept. A hand reached out from behind the camera, pale, thin, hairless hand, with skin stretched too tight across the bones. And the digits were wrong, four to each finger, and double-jointed, moving so fluidly they might as well have been tentacles. It rested a long finger on my forehead, trailing down my nose, over my lips, brushing so soft that I couldn't tell whether it was touching at all. Something in German again, a sing-song voice barely above a whisper. It was longer this time, but I paused to keep going back until I could write down every word as close as I could hear it. I watched the rest of the video before I translated anything. He stayed beside me for a long time, but I didn't want to fast forward because I was afraid of missing some crucial dialogue. I stared at it, staring at me, for almost an hour before I couldn't take it anymore. The camera had been still for a long time, and I hadn't heard or seen any other sign of the perpetrator. I decided, even if something else did happen that night, then I'd prefer not to know. I rummaged around until I found the elevator and the grocery store tapes too, writing down all the German from them to translate. After hacking my way through the spellings a few times, Google Translate gave me this. Tape 1. Question marks. Don't know. I threw it out before I knew what it was. Tape 2. Me in the elevator.
Look at him go. I can't believe he's going back into the apartment after what I told him last time.
Tape 3. Me at the grocery store.
Found him again. Look how calm he is, just going about his life. Do you think he's seen it yet?
Tape 4. Whispered while I slept.
Sleep, baby, sleep. Thy father guards the sleep. Thy mother shakes the little trees. There falls down one little dream. Sleep, baby, sleep. Sleep, baby, sleep. The sky draws the sheep. The little stars are little lambs. The moon, the little shepherd. Sleep, baby, sleep. Sleep, baby, sleep. I shall bring your sheep. One with a golden bell. That shall be thy journeyman, to guide you safe to hell.
That's it. I don't know whether this thing is trying to threaten me or protect me, or what it could be trying to protect me from. Either way, I don't think I'm going to sleep tonight. I don't know what I would do if I woke up and saw that thing watching me, recording me, even touching me with its long, disjointed fingers. When the next DVD comes, if it comes, I don't think I'll have the stomach to watch. Night 23. Your dream job. A gun on the table between us. We could both walk out alive if we wanted, but how are we supposed to trust that's what the other was thinking too? What would you like to be when you grow up? An astronaut? A captain of industry? How about a TV producer? Well, here's what you have to do. Study real hard so you can get into a good college. Then keep on studying all the way till you get your degree. Student loans? Don't worry about it. You'll be making plenty of money in your career, so why stress about paying with your minimum wage now? Looking for a job? No problem. You're an expert in the field you've chosen. The places you want to work are going to chase after you to work for them. Sound familiar? Yeah, well, I fell for it too. 4 years out of college, and I haven't used my chemistry degree for anything besides mixing drinks. At first, I wanted to be on the cutting edge of biomedical research. But now, I settle for any somewhat relevant job at a pharmaceutical company. Hell, I'd even hand out the drugs at the convenience store if they'd let me. It wasn't just the money either. It was about that look my friends gave me when I solved the complex problem that flew over their heads, or the excitement of my new class schedule, or the pride in my parents' faces when they introduced their future chemist to their friends. Science wasn't just a future plan for me. It was my identity. It's not my dream that's dying every day at the bar. It's just that every day that passes makes it that much harder to answer the question, who are you? Until I got an offer. The offer. The dad of a friend whose brother I knew from... doesn't matter where. It was a tech startup with real investors. No experience required. Paid on-the-job training. I was going to have an office with one of those fancy little name plaques on the door. I was going to have a title and a salary and sick days and healthcare and 401k and everything. The CEO and I hit it off really well, too. At first, I was terrified to ask questions that might betray my inexperience. But he was easygoing and seemed more interested in my personality than my qualifications. Loyalty, he stressed over and over again. That's all he cared about. Everything else you can teach. We don't expect to make any money off the new hires, he explained. But a good man who's been here 10 years is worth more to me than 10 great men giving a year each. That's why the first day on the job wasn't a tour of the facilities or an analysis of our knowledge. We were going on a company team-building exercise right off the bat. Big rope and obstacle course that we were supposed to help each other through, doing exercises like trust falls and listening to motivational talks. What's not to like about a field trip on your first day? 10 of us took 2 SUVs. It was a pretty long drive into the woods where the camp was, but it gave me a chance to get to know the other employees. A lot of fresh faces like myself, right out of college, and desperate to prove themselves. At first, I was a bit incredulous that this much money and trust was being placed in a newbie team. But the CEO told us it made sense from a long-term perspective. How are you going to have lifelong employees if you don't catch them early? And who is going to be more loyal than the guy who was given his first shot to follow his dream? All 10 of us were gathered in a cabin while the CEO gave his talk. 5 tables faced the front, 2 to each table. You wouldn't have found better spirits on a campus that had just cancelled the final exams in favour of an impromptu music festival. And the CEO just fed the fire, talking about the cutting-edge research facilities with secured funding both private and government. Gene manipulation, panacea medicine, even immortality. Humanity was on the tipping point into a futuristic age, and we were going to be the ones to make it happen. Now I hope you all understand why I value loyalty so highly, he lectured. Before any of you have reached middle age, pending discoveries are likely to double the average lifespan. We aren't a company, we're a family, and that's a bond for life. Now, here comes the hard part. He turned his laptop to display the draft of a news article. 5 fatalities in deadly SUV accident. It was the same type of car we drove here in. Feelings, promises, even oaths. It's a fragile thing to build a company on that's going to last 100 years, he said. I'd like to have a little more insurance than that, so this is how we're going to play. He walked around the room, placing a handgun on each of the 5 tables. Tension rippled through the room in a wave of rigid posture and fixated eyes. I chanced to glance at the person beside me, blonde girl, mid-20s, eyes like saucers. I couldn't imagine her ever holding a gun in her life. What kind of screwed-up team-building exercise was this? The CEO didn't say another word until all the guns were handed out, each positioned right in the centre of the table. "The rules are simple," he said, face quivering with excitement. "When I say go, the first person to shoot the other one at their table gets a job. No going easy either. I want a clean headshot. If you just wound them, then you don't have the job yet. We're going to go 1 table at a time so everyone else can stay safe and avoid collateral damage." One of the girls made a nervous giggle and rolled her eyes. I guess she didn't think he was serious. Not until he snapped the gun up from her table and blasted a hole through the window. No one made a sound after that.
"Do I look like I'm joking?"
he asked the girl, bending low over the table to put his face up against hers.